This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When Dawn Dreyer was diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder, her therapist suggested drawing as a way to cope with her depression. What started as humble sketches quickly developed into a comic strip about a superhero called Bipolar Girl with her trusty sidekick Casey the Wonder Dog. The duo battles the creature, the villain who represents shame, depression, and perfectionism. Since then, Dawn has come to realize that there is power in telling a personal story. For her, it is a superheroic battle against the stigma of mental illness. She teamed up with visual artists to produce a series of animated shorts about Bipolar Girl and other personal narratives. One of them is called Fear, and it was selected to screen at this year's Tribeca Film Festival. Dawn's going to give us a sneak preview, a short talk tomorrow night at Mercury Studio in Durham, but she joins us first on The State of Things. Welcome, Dawn. Good to talk with you.
Yeah, so great to be here. Thank you.
Take us back to that time when you were first diagnosed with bipolar 2. What were you experiencing? How were you feeling at the time?
Yeah, I think that what the therapist that I was working with at the time recognized was that I would have these huge bursts of activity. I was coordinating events at the Center for Documentary Studies at the time, and we would do these huge institutes 7-8 days long, and there'd be weeks of preparation. And then at the end of it, everyone would be like, this is so life-changing, thank you. And I would just crash and lose sort of not be able to hear any compliments, not be able to really, even though some part of me knew what had happened was exciting and valuable, I just couldn't take it in. And then I would just, you know, I would just crash, and it would be so hard for me to come back in. There was a back door into CDS, and I just, you know, even though I would stay there till late at night, I just remember like being so ashamed. I would try and kind of sneak into my office, and you know, that's the shame is it's
CDS, of course, Center for Documentary Studies. So is this the first time you'd experienced that kind of thing? Because, you know, you could think of that as part of the cycle of that, all that preparation, all the energy it takes and the excitement and emotion. And now it is over. And so, yeah, time to relax. Had you noticed anything like this before?
Yeah, because I first started struggling with depression in my 20s, I'd say early 20s. And so, you know, I think just generally speaking, when I would accomplish things, they would happen in sort of a burst, but it was a very unreliable kind of, you know, I couldn't count that would always happen. And what was kind of funny is a few years later, after I'd been working on the project for a while, I saw a new psychiatrist and she was like, I don't think you're really bipolar. I think you've got ADD and major depression, because she felt like that the manic episodes were they happened too conveniently, you know, like when I had something to get done.
Yeah.
And so I just remember sitting there thinking like, okay, I've got this film called Bipolar Girl Rules the World, right? But it was okay, because a change in diagnosis is very, very common, you know? So I just felt like it's just part of the story. But yeah, I mean, I do think that there's been this rhythm to my life, and you know, also like a lot of things that a lot of creative people do, like, oh, we're going to stay up till 3 in the morning, and you know, I can't do that.
You get tired when it's done, and it's done. Time to crash and stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
But this is different, and it is a diagnosis. And as you say, with the first diagnosis, then when did the drawing come about? Because that was actually prescribed for you as part of the therapy?
Well,
recommended?
Yeah, no, I think that not the drawing in particular, but really just drawing on, you know, my desire. I mean, to represent my experiences in some way. So certainly, you know, as a writer, journaling, or, you know, for me, it was also like writing and then sharing the writing in very informal settings. And I've always, like, even as far back as college, like I've made these drawings, right? And so I think when I started to draw Bipolar Girl and Casey, you know, part of it was just being able to have just barely enough distance to see what was happening. And I do think that that kind of observation and also the ability to show someone like what I was experiencing was incredibly helpful, because at least it suggests like the tiniest bit of distance, right, between everything I was experiencing. And
did Bipolar Girl evolve out of doodles, or was she a self-conscious, premeditated character?
No, I think she just showed up. I mean, it's a funny, yeah, I just, the superhero and you know, my understanding of her has really changed over time, too, because I think, you know, just dark humor, right? Big part of I think, just my family culture and like how to deal, you know, with things. But just this persistence, like you are going to get up every day and you're going to get better. And I think that was when she first kind of appeared, that's what I believed. Like, I believed that that was how it was going to happen, that I was just going to get up every day and I was going to, today was going to be different and I was just going to keep pushing. But that's not.
You're going to take control of it.
And, right. Yeah. That somehow is going to beat it. You know, that's what superheroes do, right? They pow, they beat it down.
But then there's one of the bipolar girl frames, I guess, episodes is the box. And, and that's one that you use frequently to demonstrate. So tell us about Box and how that illustrates the role of this character in your life.
Yeah. So I think really for me, one of the most devastating parts of living with depression is this just enormous sense of isolation. I mean, certainly when I'm, you know, kind of in the worst place with depression, I retreat. I'm in my room, not picking up my phone. So there is that sense of isolation and then the shame on top of the isolation. And so Box shows me kind of, you know, very literally in that space. And, you know, for me, you know, some part of that isolation was harming myself, and I only say that because I'm not like I don't love talking about that, but I know that people it happened. You know, people do it, and a big impetus for this work, and I will get back to Box, but a big impetus for this work is about kind of breaking through isolation. But anyway, Casey the Wonder Dog is the one who's able to get in the box, and you know, and at the end of it, Bipolar Girl says, "Well, it's good to have a Wonder Dog around when you need one," and I think, you know, again, in that drawing and that and what became Box, sort of the animated short, it was like the compassion and the love was what was able to get through the box. Bipolar Girl couldn't get through.
No. And it was a doggy door that
right.
that allows Casey to get in. But that's it, that there are these sort of mystical spaces if you allow for them. And if you try to stop pushing against the wall of the thing you've created, by golly, there's a mystical entrance. So that's part of it. But you had a real life episode that in some ways paralleled Box in terms of your being depressed, and your parents have played an important part in all of this.
Yeah, no, certainly, yeah. So, this is before like texting, right? And call. I mean, I didn't even have caller ID, but when my mom was, you know, she would call me, and I always knew it was her because she would hang up right for the voicemail and call back, but there was this one day like I just couldn't pick up the phone, my mom drove from Raleigh to Durham and you know, let herself in, and she came in and I knew, I knew by the look on her face that she'd been worried that something might have happened to me, you know, that I might have killed myself or that I might have, I don't know, but she had driven that whole way scared. And my parents are exceptional humans and have provided the kind of support to me that you can never really thank, you know, I can't thank them enough. So I just, you know, that's one of those times where to know that I'd frightened her so much, I didn't ever want that to happen again. And then we came up with a system where if I couldn't talk, I would pick up the phone and say, I can't talk. And just, you know, texting would have been convenient at that time, but it wasn't there.
So much of the journey of discovery for you is, as you can imagine, people who are enduring these disorders have all that kind of love and affection around them, and it's the letting it in. It's the what mystical moment, what irrational cave-in allows the thing to register with you and say, oh, let's come up with a system, let's come up with a code. So the supergirl, superhero kind of emerges. From that, you decide to animate. Talk about the decision to then animate these and work with an animator.
Right. So the first person that I worked with was a woman named Emily Ensminger. And I really enjoy my doodles and I do share them. But I wanted to collaborate with someone to bring them sort of further out. And so I did. I had taught a class at the Center for Documentary Studies and Emily was in the class and mentioned she did animation. And so I connected with her. And that whole process was pretty incredible because it was really something to be seen and understood in a way and then have it reflected back to me and, you know, by someone who didn't share my particular set of experiences. So that was it was really, I mean, and plus I was collaborating, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to make a film, is that the other kinds of creative work I do, you know, writing or audio, like, you don't need a team necessarily. It helps, but you don't need one. And so having a collaborator was hugely, it was,
I wonder,
it was
what the
great
difference is here, too, because, again, this might be therapy for someone to collaborate, get outside of yourself. As you can imagine, this is sort of, this will help you. But if you force that, I'm trying to get at here how you felt, or if there was a difference between making yourself collaborate or, at this point in your development, allowing yourself to collaborate, and if there's a difference in how that feels.
So the desire to collaborate yeah. was always there. I mean, one of the things that really, you know, I'm pretty grateful about where I am right now. But for a long time, what was very upsetting and difficult was that all of these opportunities for collaboration that I'd had in the past, where I'd have these excited conversations and connect and then not be able to follow up on, that was incredibly, I mean, I just felt so much regret around that. So, you know, I would say even today, like, I am like 100% aware that when I am working in partnership with someone, I thrive. And when I retreat, things don't go so well. But I still have this resistance, like, I should be able to do it myself. But I mean, I know that's not true, but there's still that tension, right?
Luckily, you've got plenty of evidence to the contrary. So
yes,
so
tons.
You can win a number of cases against yourself.
That's right, exactly. And that kind of feels that way.
Tell us a little bit about fear and what's going on in that documentary.
Right. So I met Zangelo actually in a therapy group that we were in. He stood up one day and said, "Dawn, you are my sister." And I was really curious. Like, here we're coming from very different backgrounds. He's Chinese American, older, very professional. But we sat down one day and had coffee, and we're talking about, you know, him maybe being in the film. And he said, you know, "I was 4 years old when my parents disappeared and my 11-year-old sister took care of me."
In Beijing. This is
in Beijing, China,
right?
And I just was like, stop talking, just because I wanted to get that story fresh, you know, because I knew, it really was one of those moments, like, and that's the beginning of the film. So.
Right. So here's a man who lost his family to the Cultural Revolution. His sister takes care of him. He comes to the U.S. He talks about the difficulty he had in coping with his own depression here in the United States.
Despair is kind of ranging from a huge extreme, from suicidal thought to just like a despair for not being able to clean my carpet good enough. Suicidal thought probably ran to early 1980s to 2002, so almost two decades of a daily, if not weekly, suicidal thought.
There's a clip from Don Dreyer's animated short called Fear. Going to be a sneak preview of the short tomorrow night at Mercury Studio in Durham. So he comes through this, and give us a spoiler alert here. Tell us sort of what it is that brings him and helps him through.
Oh, okay, spoiler. I think for Zangelo, one part of it was a spiritual journey that he is on. And I really do believe that he is looking for a source, of love, of it's not as simple as religion being sort of a comfort. I mean, he challenges himself. He continually challenges himself. But it was, I think the symbols that he's looking for are often, you know, Mary symbols. And again, just finding this like love and acceptance that I don't think he felt was part of his life because of just constantly having to be on guard.
And the ultimate acceptance was when he came to accept himself and his condition. Let's listen.
How to deal with depression, to accept it, to give depression space. If it feels so bad, so despair, what space you need? Entire house, entire world, gave it a space. This is a part of you.
That's a clip from Fear, Dr. Zangelo Chen explaining how he copes with depression today. Dawn Dreyer is the filmmaker. She's with me now. What does he mean by that, giving it space?
This goes back in some ways to the bipolar girl character, right? Like, her approach is just going to like to be to fight. And I think Zangelo, you know, given you know, he says at another part in the film, like, he could have been killed, right, for speaking against the government. So he's got this foe, and the fear and anxiety that pervade his life long past the fact that the fear was useful, right? And so I do think that for Zenglo, and I think for me too, it's creating the space where it's acceptance, and it's not so much the battling against. You don't give up, right? I mean, you keep. That's the thing. For me, it's like taking like the tiniest possible steps forward, but stop believing that somehow I was going to, you know, he is going to vanquish it, right? And you know, that resonates with me.
You don't slay the dragon, you just keep the darn thing in its cave.
Yeah, or even just kind of like, at least, just kind of, you know, yeah, I don't even see it as the, it's, because then the dragon is just, it's a part of.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, I mean, not that you become best friends with the dragon, but like maybe, you know, you throw it a pork chop every once in a while.
I'm going to make you tell the story quickly because I think it's powerful. The fact that this film has been accepted at the Tribeca Film Festival. You were in New York recently as part of that. And there's a great sort of dissonance that you experienced and told you how far you've come.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I got the call from Tribeca. They left a message, actually, and I was like, well, this has to be good news because they don't reject you by phone. And the woman who had coordinated the shorts, she called me. And when I talked to her, she said, yes, you know, we love your film. And then she said, and Whoopi loves your film. And I'm like, oh, okay, Whoopi. And she, you know, and it turns out that Whoopi Goldberg was the curator for this program called Whoopi's Shorts. So that's like when it got surreal. But it was also just wonderful and a celebration, not just of the film, but also I think the people around me who had been rooting for me. It was a celebration of wellness as well.
You went to school in New York years earlier, and did you not? Or you're talking about living in New York, and walking on the streets, in the sense that wow, look how
far
you've gone.
So I never actually did get to live in New York. I got into NYU Film School, but I didn't get to go. But the part of me that so like wanted to be that filmmaker in New York, you know, I'm walking down the street, it's a beautiful day, and I could just feel her there, and she was delighted.
You are there. Dawn Dreyer, filmmaker, producer of Bipolar Girl, Rules the World, and other stories. You can get a sneak preview of Fear tomorrow at Mercury Studio in Durham and find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Dawn, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
The program is The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, which is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.